Hello, my name is Paul Krusen. I am an occupational therapist and the founder and owner of Peak Ergonomics. I've been a therapist since 1997, and I started Peak Ergonomics in 2006. And the reason I started Peak Ergonomics was because I was really tired and fed up with our broken, rickety old healthcare system. When you couple that with the just the mentality or the safety culture of our workers, it was just really a nightmare to work in. Very simple things could have been cured and remedied easily, but not in the system that I was working in. I was an outpatient. I did strictly workers' compensation insurance for a private practice. I was an employee, and I managed a clinic, and as an occupational therapist, I focused on upper extremity disorders, and then we had a couple of PTs that did the spine and the lower extremities. I also did the work conditioning, work hardening, functional capacity evaluations, job site analysis. But a lot of the things I saw a lot of tendonitis, like the dequer veins, tenosynovitis of the first dorsal compartment with a thumb and wrist extensor unit, a ton of tennis elbow, you know, some carpal tunnel issues, some golfer's elbow, some trigger finger, but it was a shame to see how the system operated. And thankfully, we had an occupational and environmental medicine physician that actually gave us a chance to see these patients before he sent them on to the surgeon. And I'm very thankful for that, because a lot of doctors don't even do that. A lot of doctors, they put you on light duty and prescribe you some medication, and if that doesn't work, then they send you to the surgeon. After the surgeon, you know, makes his $10,000 for 5 minutes of work, they just want to get you, they want to be done with you as quickly as possible. And most surgeons I know of think of therapist as the person who helps you recover from the surgery, and it was a surgery that was the benefit. And it's just a nightmare of a system, especially, you know, with workers' compensation. You have you know, anytime someone gets a surgery, then they automatically have a permanent partial disability rating, and so you look like a case like carpal tunnel. You know, a person go through the surgery and get a $20,000 check at the end, and pretty soon they start getting it in both hands, and next thing you know, it becomes a sexually transmitted disease, and you know, they're passing along to their spouse or their significant other. It's just insane. I just got sick of being inside of a dysfunctional, rickety old boat, for lack of a better analogy. It just seemed just inefficient, ineffective. people I would see. Now, granted, our clinic, we didn't really get hardly any trauma cases. So let me say, when it comes to trauma, yes, I do see merit with surgery, obviously. But for a lot of the stuff we were dealing with, just cumulative trauma, you know, looking at itises, whether, you know, a tendonitis or tendinosis, you know, different types of nerve entrapments, even though a lot of times I think that's a little fuzzy. But the way they were just handled from start to finish, thank goodness I at least got a step in. I had a chance to see these people, because probably most people don't even get a shot at therapy before they're just wheeled right into the operating room. So, you know, here's my story. I worked at this clinic for several years, and a typical case, let's just take a tennis elbow. I see a worker, I call them workers, you know, technically they're patients, but the psychology of our clinic, we were wanting to try to get people out of the patient mindset. And so we would address them as workers or employees, just trying to, you know, get them back to work as quickly as possible. You know, the worst thing you can do is for someone to, you know, stay off of work. You know, the longer you're off of work, the longer you're a patient in the patient mentality, the greater the statistic is that you're going to be, that you'll never work again. And so I refer to people as workers or employees, but that's not to be disrespectful in any way. That's just the mindset that we practiced in. So these workers would come and see me at a typical case. I would get some sort of you know, lateral elbow tenopathy. And there's a whole debate on that, you know, like what exactly, you know, is going on there. It used to be called lateral epicondylitis. You know, however, more recently, it's more of just a lateral elbow tenopathy, or some say tendinosis. And there's quite a few differential diagnoses you can go from there. But the bottom line is they had pain in their elbow that wouldn't go away. And usually when I'd see them, I'd say, so how long has your elbow been hurting? And I'm not kidding you. Usually it was at least 6 months. And sometimes it was like 2 years. Well, okay, why did it take so long for you to come see me? And it's just this mentality. First off, it's this mentality that, you know, I don't want to be a whiner. I don't want to complain. And I get that. You know, it's how we're socialized. At least me, I was born in 1972, so I'm an 80s kid. And, you know, I remember junior high and high school and, you know, PE class. You know, I mean, the coaches, you know, I remember when I was 13 and doing the running a mile to, you know, for the best I could. And I was running the best I could, about ready to puke my guts out. And what's the coach say? He goes, "Pick it up, Cruson, you're really pissing me off." I'm like, if I would pick it up anymore, I'm going to puke all over the place. But we are socialized, you know, from our coaches in junior high to, you know, not be a baby, don't be a whiner, you know, suck it up, you know, just, you know, come on, walk it off. And so I understand that. you know, that's how we're raised. And there are merits to that. Don't get me wrong. But there's also a lot of detrimental effects that do trickle through our culture with that. So, you know, usually with something like a tennis elbow, you know, it starts out, well, 6 months ago I felt a twinge. But I didn't think of anything. I didn't do anything. Yeah, I just figured it's just going to go away. And let me just make a sidebar here. Things have changed over the last 20 years. Right now, it's April 25th, 2019. 1999 was a hell of a lot different. Our obesity epidemic is just unbelievable. Which, of course, has given rise to all sorts of medical issues. With diabetes top in the list, and thyroid problems, and sleep apnea, and then our aging workforce. My goodness, I am seeing people in their 60s and 70s still at work, doing very strenuous work. And so our population has changed a lot in the last 20 years. But back to my story. I felt a twinge in my elbow, didn't think anything about it. And then it just gradually got worse and worse. And finally, I decided to say something to my supervisor. And, my supervisor just ignored me. Depending on what state you're in, there may or may not be, there, you can argue, as far as, is it a work-related issue, especially when you look at all the personal medical risk factors going on and what type of labor they really do. But let's just assume, let's just make a general assumption that these are work-related conditions, that they're doing, very strenuous work, they're doing, forceful gripping, even into awkward postures, coupled with long durations or repetitions or vibration and impact. Let's just make a general assumption that what we're talking about here is clearly work-related issues, and just to keep things simple. So they'll say, well, I told my supervisor, but he didn't do anything, or she didn't do anything, didn't really even acknowledge me. And so I kept, working. It just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And then it got so bad, I had to do something about it. Those are the key words. I finally had to do something. And that's the point that we don't want to get to. We don't want employees getting to the point of, I finally had to do something. Because when they think they finally have to do something, it's usually way far down the road than where we really want to be seeing these people to start with. So now it's been going on for, a few months. I finally had to do something since my supervisor was ignoring me. Or maybe they don't even say anything to their supervisor because they're afraid they're going to lose their job. One is, people are genuinely afraid that if they say something, they might be fired or might be disciplined or might be given special treatment in the wrong way. And so a lot of times people won't even say anything at all until they have to do something. But once they get to that point of having to do something, usually they walk into the safety manager's office and tell the safety manager, my elbow's killing me, I can't do anything, I have to go see a doctor. Well, so it depends if the company actually was using the one occupational environmental physician that was in our town, then they actually had a chance of recovery. But if they went to any other doctor, and this is a town of, at the time, a town of about a little over 100,000 people. If they just went to any other doctor, the standard treatment would be, okay, we're going to give them anti-inflammatories. Let's just say ibuprofen 800 milligrams four times a day. Or back then they were also using Celebrex, the different types. But basically put you on anti-inflammatory, restrict your work, either no use of that arm or no lifting more than, 10 pounds, 20 pounds. Well, what's interesting though, I find a lot of times that these doctors don't even understand basic ergonomics, because they might say no lifting more than 10 or 20 pounds, but they're still using a grinder 4, 6, 8 hours a day. And that grinder, even though the grinder only weighs 2 pounds, the amount of grip force combined with the awkward wrist posturing and elbow posturing and the vibration transmission is more hazardous than a force of 10 pounds or 20 pounds. Or be quite honest, I'd rather them lift 50 pounds than to be using a grinder. Restrict the work, put you on anti-inflammatories, and see you back in 2 weeks. And they just play that game until either they got better or they didn't get better. And if they didn't get better, what happens? Oh, go see a surgeon. And what do you think the surgeon does? Generally, the surgeon schedules you for surgery, especially with tennis elbow. Most of the cases that go to surgery are not successful. Regardless of what the surgeons say, they're either they're not accurate, let's just say that. I would say from what I've seen, maybe 20% of tennis elbow cases actually have a successful surgical outcome, and I think that's being generous. Most surgeons like to say it's 50-50, but I don't think they're really being completely honest with that. But that's how most cases with, but at least there was a small fraction of the community that had the opportunity to see an occupational environmental physician. And usually they would start with the same game though. Let's put you on anti-inflammatories and let's restrict your work. Now, they might be a little bit more mindful in the work restriction. But then there's the other thing to look at is, just because a doctor restricts the worker doesn't necessarily mean that restriction is going to happen. And you can have same thing. The employee or the worker is afraid they're going to get fired. So they might go back with the work restriction, and their supervisor still puts them on work that violates that restriction, and the employee's afraid to say anything. And then they don't say anything until they go to their doctor visit, and they tell the doctor, and then the employee gets chewed out because, like, well, it's your job to make sure you don't do any work that violates your restriction, and the employee's just afraid they're going to get fired. So it's just madness, quite honestly. The whole thing's maddening because 95% of this is completely preventable. So we'll continue with the story. They go to the occupational environmental medicine physician. They get 2 weeks or 4 weeks of anti-inflammatories and restricted works, and they don't get better. Well, thankfully, instead of sending them straight to the surgeon, they actually send them to me. They're like, hey, I know this really good therapist. He's on vacation right now, but Paul's filling in for him, so go see him instead. But, it still worked. So I would get these patients, and then they're already 6 months into this disorder. It's just and I would tell my patient, I say, so just a general rule of thumb, no hard science here, but just a general rule of thumb, however long you've been dealing with this disorder, this cumulative trauma disorder, whenever you start to take corrective action to do things to reverse the process, to fix this, really fix it, not just mutilate a body, but once you really take corrective action, then it takes about that long for you to recover. And so if you've been in this 6 months, well, it might just take 6 months before this problem's resolved. And my patient would usually say, well, Paul, I wish I would have seen you 6 months ago. And after hearing that day in, day out, week in, week out for, you know, a handful of years, I got sick of it. I thought, this is just insanity. I'm not happy doing this. I don't want to sit in a clinic waiting for an employee to get so bad, to be ignored by their supervisor, to get so bad to have to do something about it, to get so bad to maybe find the one out of 200 doctors in that town that would actually give them a chance before surgery. I just thought the whole system was maddening. And so I started going out to these employers and talking with them and saying, hey, why don't you put me in the plant, on the shop floor, in the plant environment, give me the first aid room, whatever, I'll take anything, but just get me on site, not to do on-site therapy, but to prevent them from ever having to have therapy. You know, I'm way too far down the road in dealing with these people. If you can have me see a person in the first few days to few weeks of that twinge, that ache, that soreness, that discomfort, whatever you want to call it, kind of those precursor symptoms that they don't even have the disorder yet, but you know they're at high risk now. Get me to see these people then, and you won't even have to worry about them going to the doctor. And, you know, unfortunately, most businesses, they're just, well, a business is numbers driven, period. I mean, businesses are in business to make money. That's what they do. And they're numbers driven. And for safety, the metric that is usually followed is OSHA recordables, basically your injuries. Or workers' compensation claims, which generally are pretty close to what your OSHA recordables are. So I do have to start phrasing things like, well, let me help you reduce your OSHA recordables, or let me help you reduce your workers' compensation claims, because then they see a number, and that number is part of their metric, and they are graded on these metrics. So I'm kind of like a special teacher or tutor that helps them get their grades better on their grade card. But all I really care about is the employee. What I care about is, let's help these employees be safe and healthy. Why do we have to put them into a system that is dysfunctional? Why can't we create a better system? And so that's why I started Peak Ergonomics. The whole goal of Peak Ergonomics is to prevent injuries. And so we have an early reporting system. As soon, it all has to start with training. I I've done, you know, I've been doing this. I actually started doing early intervention in 2004 when I was with, when I was an employee with the, with another company. And so I started in 2004 and it was very successful. I started with one client, I immediately got two more. So by January 1st of 2006, I had three clients that were just loving me. And my employer that I worked for was very gracious, and but they didn't care at all about the consulting business. They're like, we make our money in the clinic, we want clinic business. I told them, I said, well, I want to do the consulting business. And they were very gracious. They said, okay, do it, have fun. And I even offered, I said, well, you want to be partners? They're like, nope, you know, we want to see patients in the clinic, that's where we make our money. And and quite honestly, that's the whole medical community. I shouldn't say that, but in general, it's true. And I think the longer people are practicing, the more money driven they become, unfortunately. But it's all about, and I've received almost no referrals from the healthcare community, because they really don't care, quite honestly. All they care about is treating patients, and I am preventing them from getting patients, because I see people before they become patients and I stop them from becoming patients. And so I save them from this dysfunctional system that we have that we call healthcare, which is anything but caring for people's health. Excuse me, I'm a little jaded, but it's just from experience. So that's what we do. We go on site. My first client is a heavy steel manufacturer. They make very heavy steel products, a very large catalog, hundreds of different products. And that's challenging, that because that means their workstations are constantly changing. And so it's very difficult to make engineering controls when they have to change the setup of a workstation frequently. They also do plastics manufacturing, machining, small assembly, a distribution center for warehousing. So it's has a very large spectrum of occupations. And so it was a great first client for me to really cut my teeth with. And so I got them. They were very happy. I started out 3 days a week. And I've been going on now, it's 15 years later, and I'm still within our business has grown. Peak Ergonomics has grown 8 times. We have 8 employees that are consulting and doing this type of work. I have started up dozens of on-site early intervention programs, and it really varies. The number one obstacle we come up with is budget. People immediately, the bean counters see this and they're like, ah, we don't have money for this. And it's just ridiculous how short-sighted people can be. They just, I have pitched this idea to hundreds of businesses, and unfortunately, a lot of businesses are just short-sighted, and they're like, oh, that's what our work comp insurance is for. It's like, well, okay. But a lot of businesses are self-insured, and they do realize that. But still, it does really take a leap of faith for a lot of our clients to really, give us a try and say, okay, well, I'm going to. But a lot of them are under the gun too, because most of our clients come to us because they're hurting. It's like, oh, we just had 15 carpal tunnel claims last year. It's like, okay, you know, one carpal tunnel claim in the state of Missouri has a total cost of about $83,000. And we can be there two times a week for the next year for less than $83,000. So what's your hesitation on the budget? It's ridiculous. I've found ergonomic solutions. I found this one really good ergonomic solution that would just fix the exposures that were leading to carpal tunnel, and it's like $15,000 for this piece of equipment. Oh, we don't have $15,000. Oh, you don't have $15,000, but you spent $1.5 million in carpal tunnel claims last year. Really? Tell me more about this. But you know what I've always told myself is the worse off a business is that I go into, the more that they need me. And I have to tell myself, and I have to tell my employees that, because usually when we pick up a new client, they're hiring us because they're in pretty bad shape and they really need some help, and they're usually dysfunctional on a lot of levels. Now, that's not true of all of our clients. We've picked up some very stellar clients who are actually ahead of the game, and so I don't want you to think that all of our clients have been like that. But a lot of times it does take a business that's really failing in the field of safety in order for them to give us a shot. So getting into this field of ergonomics and early intervention it's challenging. It's always going to be challenging. But it's what we do. We're on site as often as our clients will find room in the budget for us to be there. And what we find is people are usually very skittish at first with their budget. But the longer we're there, the more that they see, hey, we're really helping them. Our employees are happier. We're not getting all these work comp claims. And actually, our group health plan is doing better, because a lot of times something might be work-related, but a lot of your work-related issues, people are scared to report, and so they just go and get it taken care of under their group health plan, personal medical. So when we're on site doing ergonomics and early intervention, we're not just saving on the work comp side. We're saving on the group health plan, personal insurance side. Employees are happier because they actually have someone that comes to their work, that cares about them, that has their best interest in mind, that is knowledgeable and skillful in how to prevent, or maybe if something's already starting to bud out, how to make early intervention, or maybe it's too late and they've already got a sprain or strain, or however, we know how to perform musculoskeletal disorder first aid treatment. But we're not doing on-site therapy. And there's quite a few healthcare industries that they want to be a one-stop shop, so they'll say, oh, we'll do on-site therapy too, but it's not what we're doing. We are not an on-site therapy program. We are an injury prevention business. We see people in the early stages, as early as possible, when they first had that twinge. The best story I have is my second client I got. I'm not giving names of my clients because I don't want to embarrass anybody. But the second client I have is actually one of the largest businesses in the world. It's even bigger than the U.S. federal government. But they had a a small operation out in the middle of nowhere, Missouri, and primarily sewing operations were, you know, these, and most of them, it was primarily female operators, but so these ladies were just sewing all day long, and said, oh, go see, you know, go see the operator over there. Her, she said her finger's numb. And so I go and see this young lady. Said, so how long your finger's been numb for? Because usually when I've been in the clinic and I ask someone, how long's your finger been numb for? It's usually somewhere between 6 months and 10 years. And so then she says, since 8 a.m. It was 11 a.m. So her finger went numb 3 hours ago. And I'm like, yes, this is what early intervention is all about. As soon as we can get on these things, as early as possible, take corrective action. You know, obviously with ergonomics, we want to, you know, reduce any of the ergonomic risk factors of the, you know, awkward postures, static postures, you know, the forceful types of exertion through grip and pinch and lift and push and pull and carry and, you know, any contact stress. I see contact stress as the most overlooked ergonomic risk factor out there. And then, you know, with different repetition, durations, vibration, trying to, you know, reduce these stressors either ideally through engineering, or, you know, if we can better design the workstation or the tools, or job rotation, job task enlargement, any type of administrative controls or worker behavior. A lot of it's behavioral. Sometimes they're just using their bodies. The worker is using their body inappropriately, and they don't realize they're using their body inappropriately. And so we can, especially when it comes to contact stress and awkward posture, a lot of times those can be greatly reduced through just worker behavior training. And some PPE, whether we pad, a lot of times I'll see people are using their carpal tunnel to hammer stuff in. It's like, well, you know, instead of, you know, using that part of your body as a hammer, how about we get a rubber mallet? Or, you know, some piece of a tool to do this. So, you know, the reducing ergonomic risk factors through engineering, administrative, and behavioral controls is one of the crucial steps for early intervention. And then the other thing we want to do is we want the worker to be healthy. Not only are we trying to reduce the stress of the job, but we also want to increase the healthy work capacity of the employee. And so this is why we completely embrace holistic health and wellness. We want to improve people's strength and their mobility and their endurance and their agility. Anything and everything we can do to promote wellness and health so that people are at their maximum functioning ability. And this is critical today. Our society, the United States of America, is at this point in 2019, our society is just terribly unhealthy, extremely unhealthy. It's gotten worse, and all the indicators are showing that it's even becoming worse. And we've got to, you know, we're doing this on a grassroots basis, one-on-one with these employees, trying to get them to get control of their weight, stop using tobacco, you know, be healthy, have an appropriate exercise protocol, and you know, teach them, you know, we're teaching exercises. We're not teaching therapeutic exercises. They're not coming into a PT clinic that's on site and we're showing them therapeutic exercises to treat their tennis elbow. What we are doing is teaching them preventative exercises to maximize their strength, to maximize their mobility, their endurance, their agility, so that they can be strong, healthy people. Because you have a strong, healthy person, and then we reduce the ergonomic risk factors. That's how we do it, right there. Now then, there are first aid treatments. Sometimes people have a sprain or strain, or maybe they have a cumulative trauma disorder that's been going on for too long, and it's really in the realm of an injury. In those cases, we initiate first aid treatment. You know, ice does wonders. We are big believers. Ice, probably the best piece of advice I ever got from a surgeon was ice is Mother Nature's best anti-inflammatory, and it's true. Appropriate uses of ice, you know, we've researched the market. You know, I like these ice sleeves are basically like these sleeves, you just roll them on. So you just roll it on your wrist, drive home with the ice pack on your wrist. You can do it for your elbow, ankle, but primarily what we're seeing is wrist and elbow. Ice 15 minutes, four times a day, especially after work, during lunch, after work, during breaks. As much as we can ice. Sometimes heat is more appropriate. You know, massage, instructions in self-massage or the use of massaging devices, and especially if trigger points have kind of embedded in the muscles, recommend moist heat and massage. And you know, non-rigid support. So let's say, you know, if they do have some tennis elbow going on, some sort of forearm support. There's different ones we use and try. Just education, just teaching them how to take care of themselves, just self-care. Real simple stuff. Nothing you really even have to be a physical therapist or an occupational therapist. However, those seem to be the two professions that gravitate towards this. Just about 4 years ago, we hired an outstanding kinesiologist. He was a strength and conditioning coach and a phenomenal kinesiologist, personal trainer. We took him under our wings and trained him for 2 years, and he is the cream of the crop, has the best results. So this just isn't something that you have to be a therapist to do, because we're not doing therapy. anyone that really understands the human body, you need to understand musculoskeletal disorders, understand the anatomy, the kinesiology, the physiology, the ergonomics, but you know, so that's a broad spectrum of fields. I could see chiropractors, nurses, exercise physiologists. Obviously physicians, but physicians aren't generally interested in this, unfortunately, but maybe that will change. So that's what we do. Peak Ergonomics is an injury prevention business, and we go on site. We do training programs. A lot of times we start out with training or job analysis. Business will call and say, you know, we're having some issues out of this job. Can you come analyze the job, or we need some training? Well, you do training. So certainly, you know, we have hourly worker training, office worker training, engineering training, ergo team training, executive training, basically any type of group of people that you want to be trained in ergonomics. And you know, we do job analysis for everything. we've seen it all. And I'll just leave it at that. We've been everywhere you can think of, from 1,500 feet underground to up on top of towers to on farms, into breeder farms, which are very interesting. Just anywhere and everywhere, seeing about everything. But that's what we do. Peak Ergonomics, we use early intervention, ergonomics, exercise, it's preventative exercise, and education to keep people healthy, to have healthy workers, because healthy workers are the bottom line. Thank you for listening.